It's Saturday, September 30th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, we're taking your calls and questions of technology. But first, our Week in Geek news segment.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the minis and the twits.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Geek Speak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. This episode of Geek Speak is dedicated to Kathy Day, who passed away on Thursday. Kathy Day was many things during her life: wife, artist, accomplished athlete, an editor and manager of the publications group at Bell Aerospace, and a mother to our very own John Tracy. Kathy, we will miss you. Today on our show, we're taking your calls and questions of technology, and of course, during the first half of the show, we are doing our Geek News segment, keeping you up to date in everything in the week in Geek. But during the second half of the show, we will welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers to do so: 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us right now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. Geek Speak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Miles Elam, technical trainer at Surf Control, and Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Hello, technical geeks. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lyle.
Let's start off. We're gonna take people's calls in about half an hour, but let's start off with our news segment of the week. Sean, you have a lot written up, which we're getting up on the website next hour. Let's go ahead and start with the first one on your brain.
Yeah, well, actually, Miles has got some cool news about the Mars rover I want to hear, but before we move on to that, let's talk about this week in tech, Intel Developer Forum, San Francisco, Moscone Center.
Did you go?
No. I had every opportunity to, but I had so much work to do. There's just no way.
All right. So what about your obligation to us? I mean, come on.
You know.
And Miles means us in the broad sense of everybody that's listening right now. We all want to know what happened there. So what are you going
to
do about it?
I would have been nice to walk through the expo to see the booths and what technologies or people are working on. Or I could have sat in a big auditorium and listened to the Intel heads on stage showing things off and talking about technologies that we may or may not use.
Or you could have read...
or you could just read about it online and get more information.
So what's going on?
And look at pictures. That's what I did. But, you know, from the sidelines, I thought it was interesting that they announced the Core 2 Quad. We've talked about this.
Yes.
The Quad Core, Core 2, mm-hmm. Intel processor.
One of the worst names ever for technology to confuse the public.
It's so silly because it's a Quad Core, Core 2 Quad.
Oh, man. What does that mean? Is that eight? I'm trying to keep up the count.
No, it's a...
it's got
a four core, right?
It's got four processing cores. In the chip.
So it's like four CPUs.
So, you know, a few years ago, you would buy a processor and it had one processor core. They've been able to shrink that processor core down and then glue four of them together. Actually, to be precise, they originally glued two processing cores together, and then they designed a new chip that actually
has two
did it in a sophisticated, intelligent manner. They were two processing cores, but they're coupled in a much more intelligent way, so they share cache and so on. And they call that the core two processor, or the core. That was the first core processor. Core 2 is the second generation. The quad is actually two core 2s that are slammed together.
Okay.
See, I have this image in my head of Elmer's school glue. Just like, hey, this one CPU.
Yeah, that's probably, you know, that's a good way of thinking about it for a kid.
What else do they do with Intel?
So what's kind of cool about the Core 2 is it's supposed to deliver 70% more performance over the Core 2. So four cores gives you 70% more performance.
That's impressive.
But, you know, it really depends on the application that you're talking about. If it's gaming, you're not going to see 70% more performance. In fact, you probably won't even see 5% more performance. Because especially at higher resolutions, games depend on the GPU, the graphics processing unit. But if you are using Windows XP with multi-threaded applications, typically these are applications that cost more money, that are more professional, that can take advantage of these multiple cores, you will see quite a big improvement. Digital video editing, wow. That's, you know, you'll want to get one of these chips if you're doing that sort of thing.
But these announcements and stuff are at the developers conference, which means that they're not on the shelf yet.
Right? You know, the Core 2 Quad will be on the shelves in November in the enthusiast form, which is the Core 2 Extreme Quad Core Processor. Kid you not, that's the name. And of course, Intel then gave us a peek at where this is all going. And they hope to, within 5 years, and Ottolini, CEO of Intel, stood on stage and showed a wafer with I kid you not, chips with 80 cores.
What?
80 cores.
See, I thought you had a typo when you wrote this up. So
they're calling it TeraScale because it can actually deliver a teraflop of performance, which is a lot. It's a trillion
floating point operations per second.
A trillion floating point.
Will the processor be bigger than a normal processor?
No, it'll be... I mean, it'll be bigger, of course, but it'll still be less than an inch in, you know, size. Yeah, it'll be...
In 5 years, they're going to shrink it down again, so it's going to be just like
it'll just keep The technology just keeps shrinking, and then you can slap more cores together, and before you know it, you've got 80.
Yeah. Now, I can see that, you know, taking a core duo and duplicating that and slapping together is going to give you 70% increase in performance, as they say. That makes sense to me. But as you keep doing that, you're going to see less and less performance increase per core.
It depends upon the application and it depends upon the operating system.
Right.
Can the operating system actually be splitting itself into running in different environments?
Well, Sun Solaris has been running on 128 processors and more for years. And it's because the operating system was made for that. For a single processor, Solaris was always much slower, and people used to call it slow Laris because of that. But the thing behind it was that it was able to scale to these huge volumes.
Interesting.
Processors right now, the latest generation of AMD and Intel processors, have what's called virtualization that allow you to run multiple operating systems on the same processor core, and they're completely separated.
Wow! So you're running
logically.
Same time.
So yeah, you could do that with Intel. With 80 cores, you can do even cooler things. There's improved energy efficiency. The modularity of all these cores allows you to break up the work.
Really, so
you don't get hot spots. You can put cores to sleep that aren't being used. There's extended lifetimes. You can maybe put some of these cores in reserve so that if a core burns out, a spare comes up and you don't lose any processing power. So, I mean, extended lifetime is huge.
Wow.
New capabilities, you can add more integration. You can actually integrate networking, security, other tasks into the processor that are on other chips right now. The way you connect the fabric together, you can do some interesting things there to reroute for congestion and that sort of thing. And they're talking about actually gluing memory on the bottom of processor chips.
So it's closer?
Yeah, so it's right there. It helps with heat dissipation, but it really increases memory bandwidth. Yeah. So there's a lot of crazy things going on.
Yeah, bottom line, Windows will crash faster than ever before.
Windows Vista even. this is interesting. I'm a geek. I like this tech stuff. But for some reason, you know, it's maybe showing to me how much I enjoy Macintoshes. The idea that now Mac's on Intel, this excites me even more. Is that ridiculous or what? When you said multiple operating systems on one chip, it's like, oh, you could actually run you know, Windows and Mac at the same time on one computer, that would be really appealing. Anyway, so it's kind of telling that I'm so interested in Macs that I'm, like, excited about this.
You know, it's sad. What's really sad is that you're thinking about these, or actually a lot of people have to think about these chips. They're so powerful, yet, you know, we're still worried about how fast it runs an operating system. I mean, the operating system should just be, you know, blindingly
invisible.
Fast.
Sure.
It should invisible. We should never think about, oh, I need a faster processor to run Windows XP.
Or run Windows Vista, more likely.
Well, I don't know. You know, talking about Vista,
yeah.
We're in talks with Microsoft right now, and it looks like we're going to get a Vista expert on the show.
Great.
And that should be really cool. I'd like to learn a lot more about myself.
I would too. Yeah. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The Geeks, Miles Elam, and Sean Cleveland. Sean, thanks for that report on Intel Developer Conference. Miles.
And speaking of Vista, the Mars rover Opportunity is reaching a new Vista. It's finding itself at the Victoria crater. It's a crater approximately 5 times wider than the Endurance crater that it was at previously, that examined. And it's been called a geologist's dream come true. Because it's such a deep crater, it means they have a very high impact from the meteors that created it. And you have a lot of different strata with regard to the rock layers underneath.
Mm-hmm. Is it going in?
It probably will, yeah. Mm-hmm. To find all that information, it's probably going to have to go into
the crater.
It's going
to have to go in, yeah.
Now, its sister rover, the Spirit, is running into some power problems, and they're trying to get it up this hill. It's facing a literally uphill battle to get up to the top of a hill so that it can point its solar panels toward the sun. Mars is going into winter in the part of the planet that Spirit is on. And so unless they can get the panels pointed to a direct contact with the sun for all that period of time, the rover may finally die out.
Uh-huh.
Now, bear in mind, though, that these rovers were meant to be used for 3 months, and they are now up more than 10 times longer than their original specs were going to allow for.
Very cool.
I guess to travel between the craters was quite a distance.
Yes, the distance between the Endurance crater and the Victoria crater was a 5.7-mile journey. Seems like a
21 months.
Took 21 months to get there.
Wow.
Well, you know, if you get a flat tire, it's which the Spirit does have. The Spirit
it's
has actually some wheels that aren't turning
anymore.
The
reliability anymore. Of these things is just incredible to me.
Right. Well, the next version of the Mars rover,
it'll last a day.
Well, no. One of the things they're worried about, and because, for example, the solar panel issue that has always been an issue throughout the entire lifetime of these rovers, is putting plutonium up onto the rover. And NASA's...
Like a little nuclear reactor.
No.
Self-powered.
No,
well, it's a differential between heat and cold, generating electrical charge.
Yeah,
it's
right.
The same way that the Pioneer and the Voyager crafts, that's how they are still powered. That's how they're still sending information, because a standard 12-volt battery ain't getting it.
And they're going so far away that they don't have sunlight that will be usable, unlike the rovers. So go on with the new rover.
It is called a nuclear generator, Lyle. That's what NASA refers to it.
That's fine. That's fine. Are they going to do that, or are they still back and forth on it? Or are they thinking about solar panels?
They're taking in comments from the public, most likely because someone was going, plutonium?
Right.
Even though I've heard a lot of people say, well, why don't we just take all the nuclear waste and fire it off into space? Well, that's what they're talking about doing. And
well, the fear, of
course. But the concern is on takeoff, if something were to happen to the rocket, where would that radioactive material go?
Right. Of course, most likely it would shatter into...
No, it actually probably wouldn't shatter. The specs for... Because we've launched plutonium before.
Sure.
The Cassini probe.
I meant that it would disintegrate and spread so thin that it wouldn't matter. That's my...
No, actually it ends up being in that self-contained item, and it doesn't get crushed. It doesn't die. It doesn't get destroyed, and it falls into the ocean and sinks.
Yeah, so it's only dangerous when it becomes a dust form.
Mm-hmm. Or aerosol,
And they liken it to more like ceramic pieces that are almost indestructible. They survive high explosive impact, and they should just fall and, like Miles says, hit the ground.
Yeah, it's like depleted uranium. I mean, plutonium, think of it like a heavy metal, like depleted uranium. Why do people use depleted uranium? Because it's so dense that it can go through anything without breaking apart.
You know, we just don't call about this today. Okay, let's go on to the next. Let's go on to the next story, Sean.
Miles, I'm...
Sure. Sony is doing a global recall of their lithium-ion batteries. Just so happens that I have one of those in my work laptop.
A lithium-ion battery from Sony?
Yeah, that actually has the part number associated with the recall.
Oh, really? So are you going to return it, or are you just going to wait till
it explodes? I called onto my help desk and said, hey, I have this laptop. What do I do
Wait. You're at work, and you called the help desk?
Whoa. Miles called IT.
You're not supposed to do that. You're a geek. You're supposed to handle everything yourself.
Oh, I'm supposed to just, like, take apart the battery, take out a soldering iron.
It's probably a bad idea.
Yeah, that would be a bad idea.
Yeah. Remember the Vio I destroyed?
So what did they say? Did they just go into chaos? Did they say, oh my God, you've got this battery. Explosive situation. Call the bomb squad.
No, actually, it wasn't that big of a deal. And I was letting the help desk know that it wasn't a big deal for me because I have two batteries. And one of them's a low capacity, one's a high capacity. And I've been using the high capacity one, especially when I go on the road.
Sure.
And the high capacity one is not on the recall list. So told them, I have this other battery. Take it back when you get a chance.
Okay, Sean.
So I do have a new story this week. HP acquired Voodoo PC.
Yeah, who's Voodoo PC?
They're like Alienware. Or Falcon Northwest.
High-end like gaming systems.
Extremely
really cool
high-end gaming systems. They're really cool boutiques that mod these systems. They put water cooling, a lot of times their own water cooling inventions in these things. They paint them. They guarantee ultimate performance. They even overclock the parts. And, of course, the people who buy these are usually just gamers. Looking for the most performance they can possibly get. Yeah, with money.
These things are pricey.
Your dentist and your lawyer.
So is HP really a big market competitor with Dell?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Are those the two top boys right now?
Those are pretty much the top players.
Okay, so HP Dell started this. The same thing as Dell is.
Yeah, Dell back in March bought Alienware. They had their own enthusiast line of computers, the XPS line. But they just didn't have the brand in that space.
They didn't have the hipness,
yeah. And Alienware, of course, are just really well-built systems. Well, it turns out the Voodoo PC, they didn't want to get purchased, but they always thought if we were, we would want to get purchased by HP. And Raoul Sood, who is the founder of Voodoo PC, explained his reasoning in a really long blog on the website, Voodoo PC website. Well, we'll have the link up a little later today. And his reasoning was HP is backed by a $3.5 billion R&D budget. They have the ability to generate an average of 11 unique patents a day. Can you believe that? They generate 11 a day on average. And just having access to their R&D and their lab to him is like getting the golden ticket to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
That's cool.
So he will now be the chief technologist. And his other partner is going to be the director of strategy for their gaming division. So it'll be interesting to see what HP does with Voodoo PC. But I would expect that you'll still be able to go to VoodooPC.com.
For a while.
Machines will still come with Voodoo PC logo. I mean, HP bought them for who they are now.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to change
them. One of the things about the Voodoo Stream and also Alienware is that it's a recommendation you can make saying, yeah, if you get one of these machines, you'll be really happy. But there's also this whole thing that they don't do the kind of quantity that the larger markets handle, like Dell's normal line and HP's normal line.
Not
even close. So now you're dealing with
you're talking about 20, 30 computers a month.
Right. So of that type.
But these are 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, maybe even more.
So, but they might be selling a lot more than that. But the point is that you get a machine, and it's kind of a custom machine for you. Even though there might be another 50 of them out there, it's kind of custom. So then you're dealing with a little bit more complexity in driver support and things of that nature. You kind of got to know the machine, kind of like it's a custom computer. You can't just go up to a Dell site, and look at the model number, and get all the support you need. So
you're going to get somebody right away.
Oh, really? So they have good support.
Oh, but their support's amazing.
So it's worth it. Kind of handheld, really good machine. It's just really expensive.
Right.
All right. And, it's probably better than making computers yourself and giving them to friends like you do all the time, right? You should take your friends and tell them to go there. And that's...
Wait a second.
I'm one of those guys. So, no, keep supporting your... Okay, what's up with the smelly planet? Who put the story up? Miles?
I put that story up.
Okay, tell us about it.
Yeah, it's a plant that smells. And I don't mean a plant that has a bad odor. I mean a plant that follows odors.
Oh, a plant.
That can smell.
Yes, a plant.
Okay, a plant that can smell things.
Yes. It's the parasitic daughter plant. Wait, why would you want that?
Why has the plant evolved to have that task, have that ability?
Because it's parasitic. It needs to be able to latch on to other types
of plants. I'm sorry, God. It's parasitic.
See, why you gotta be like that?
So it smells at other plants?
Right. And so they had for a long time, they just thought that this parasitic plant just grew in random directions because it didn't seem to follow the sunlight. It didn't seem to follow. But what they found was if they put the plant next to a tomato plant, the plant would grow toward the tomato plant 80% of the time. And that was due to the odor of the tomato plant. And so to test it, they put scent chemicals from a tomato onto rubber. And 73% of the daughter seedlings headed toward
the rubber-smelling tomato.
The tomato-smelling rubber, yeah.
Thank you. Wow, cool. So is this the first, what is that called? Olfactory plant?
Sure.
Olfactory detecting plant.
If you want to call it that, that's fine.
And people can make fun of you, Lyle. Congratulations.
I don't know what it's called. It's a plant that smells.
So what's the name of this plant?
The parasitic daughter plant, or the daughter plant. D-O-D-D-E-R.
Doesn't the idea of that kind of plant scare you? What if it gets really good at what it does and starts attacking people? Is that you have a fear about that at night?
You stand 5 feet away and go, oh my God, it's attacking me.
Stand here for 4 years, it'll get me.
anybody see that movie, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes?
Yes.
It could happen.
This is not going to be tomatoes. It's going to be eating tomatoes.
You could make a remote controlled pot and you could then, you know, send it after people.
All right.
Okay. So Rick, who's answering our phones, Rick Philman.
Yeah.
He's here every week and he's awesome. Sent a link to a story about Korean Airlines, Qantas, and Virgin have banned the use of in-air use of laptops from Dell and Apple because of this battery recall.
Wow.
But and the reason is the airlines are implementing the ban after reports that defective batteries and even some that weren't listed as defective on companies' websites could catch fires. They're really worried about these of Dell, specifically Dell and Apple laptops.
Oh man, who also owns that airline?
So I've got a Toshiba.
Does HP own that airline?
I've got a Toshiba, so you know when I'm take a Virgin flight and I'm up on the
you have to bring your
the Aloha deck, you know,
yeah,
sipping a little something. I could pull out my Toshiba and I'd be okay.
You jet setter. So the airline company is basically kind of acting as an irrational fear because it's...
An irrational fear?
No. If they were to do it correctly, they should ban all laptop use. In fact, they should have people take their batteries out of the laptops. That would be the way to do it safely. Because you don't know when the next one... Well, I mean, Toshiba could have a line of them fail any time. I mean, it's...
That'd be fine if they actually provided power outlets on the planes. Some of them do, but the thing is there's some... What it would do is create a competition there between the ones that have the power outlets and the ones that don't. So the ones that don't have the power outlets, it's in their best interest to allow it.
So let me ask you this. It's not all Dell and Apple laptops that have these problems, but they're not going to deal with the model numbers at the check-in gate and all that. They're just not going to do that.
It's just like liquids. All liquids go in the trash.
So now, yeah, but that's
because... Well, not anymore. Some of them are actually being allowed back.
And that's probably what's going on here. They're finally looking and making decisions based on
specific brands. Okay, but let's say they make decision on certain brands. It's ridiculous to say that all Dell computers shouldn't do that because only some of them have this problem.
But and who's going to keep track of that? You're talking about thousands of airports.
That's the problem. So what you need is a note from your geek, right? Like you have a note from your doctor saying you're healthy. You have the signature on your laptop.
For a small fee, I will write a note.
It's really interesting.
I doubt anybody will know
there's going to be purchases based on this. If you've got a Dell laptop and you're a businessman, you're in planes a lot, you're going to get a different laptop because you cannot be spending hours without having a computer.
That's a good
ridiculous.
Point. That's a good point. True.
All right. Apple updated OS 10 to 10.4.8. I haven't done the update yet. I'd wait a little bit. If you want to wait a whole week, I'll tell you how it goes next week. But if you don't, it's no big deal. You just go ahead and do it and call us in next week with all the complaints and problems that you ran into. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. You know, Sean, every time I read this Henry Ramirez spot, I think, you know, 2 out of 3 geeks approve him or something because, you know, you and I, this is our dentist for both of us.
I just saw him recently.
Yeah.
And, of course, he didn't know I worked at NVIDIA now. And he said, oh, my God, you work at NVIDIA. So he just bombarded me with questions about our workstation-level graphics cards, which I know nothing about. And it's just a level of geekness.
He is so geeky.
And he's like, maybe you can get me in touch with the salesperson. I want to try this card, you know, and he's talking really expensive equipment to drive.
Right, because what he's doing
is he
models teeth on his computer and actually rebuilds teeth in there while you're waiting, scans your tooth with a 3D scanner. We had him on the show a while ago. You can look at the podcast for that, geekspeak.org. In any case, he's very into that tech. And he even has, remember the screen that he has that's a 3D screen? It actually has two images in it. He spends a bit of money making sure the technology is there.
Well, the specs that he was telling me that you're shooting for now, I want to see it when it's done.
Cool.
It's going to be pretty amazing.
All right, well, let me go on with that. You're listening to Geek Speak. We are now taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. Rick Filman's waiting at the phones. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. And that's the 831 area code. But if you're not in the 831 area code, you don't have to make a long distance call. No, no. We service your needs. 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. Now, that toll-free number, which I'll say again in a second, works in California. But let's say you're out of California, you want to participate on GeekSpeak. That's no problem. Just send us an email. And if you want to just send us email anyway because you don't want to be on air and you want us to actually think about what we're doing, geekspeak.org, click on Contact Us. So again, that's 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-KUSP, or go to GeekSpeak and click on Contact Us at geekspeak.org. GeekSpeak is supported by Cruise.io Internet, offering DSL broadband, computer rentals, and tune-ups. Cruise.io has retail stores in downtown Santa Cruz and in Watsonville. More information can be found online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. All three of us are, I kind of know our tech a little bit, and we'll take your questions and comments about technology right now. Rick will answer, plug you into us in the air room, and we'll take your calls on anything you'd like to ask us that has something to do with technology. And technology is a very broad field, by the way. 476-2800. Again, 476-2800, 1-800-655-5877, or go to geekspeak.org. All right, we got any more news stories while we wait for calls? We did it, right? You got one? Go ahead.
Sure. A British man has traded in frequent flyer miles for a shot in the space.
Oh, I heard about this, yeah. I guess he was contacted by Virgin.
Yeah, Alan Watts, a British businessman, was able to use his 2 million frequent flyer miles for a space flight, a ticket aboard a 2009 Virgin Galactic space flight.
Wait, Virgin Galactic's already selling tickets for their flights?
Apparently so. Well, the thing is, this is frequent flyer miles, so it's kind of like stock. It's sort of worth, you know, it's sort of worth the actual mile, but not really. The mile has depreciated.
So they contacted him and said, you know, how would you like to use your miles to go to space? And of course, he said, yes, I want to do that. So they get a chance.
Okay, if any, my birthday is in March.
Better do a lot of flying before then.
Just the idea that you have a potential
flight. Well, we can't even afford to send you up on a Russian rocket. I'm sorry, man.
I do it, though. It's reliable. It's much safer. So, but Virgin doesn't even have the craft yet. So that's amazing. Don't you think? Are you guys excited as I am about this?
Yeah, who's the owner of Virgin? I expect that he's going to...
Branson, isn't
it? Yeah. So I expect he's going to make sure this happens before... He's not getting any younger. So it's got to happen sometime soon, right?
Yeah, he recently showed off a prototype of Spaceship 2.
Yeah.
So it's in the works.
It's going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if he makes it happen.
And when it does happen, we'll tell you here on GeekSpeak. All right. From Prunedale, Patty, welcome to GeekSpeak. What's your question today?
Oh, hi there. I'm calling because I get all kinds of different answers about what makes a cell phone perform well. And I want the answer from you guys because I know you're not going to try and sell me any of the technology. So,
what makes it perform well, as in you already have a cell phone and now you want to get the best performance out of it possible?
Well, no, I want the best service and type of phone. You know, there's always the dropped calls and the reception and all that. And you
want the best service provider and possibly the best phone. Sean and Miles. This is where I want some cell phone company throwing me money in the background. And I know how to answer this question. It's easy. I go, I want to put food on my kid's plate. I think Verizon's the best. But in reality, it depends on where you live.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know
anybody.
It depends
on how many cell towers are around where you go.
Yeah, that's what I did. I live up in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and I learned that there are more singular towers up there, and it's better reception.
Yeah.
And I talked to people who had cell phones.
And I heard that
Verizon's okay. T-Mobile, not good. Singular's the best.
In this specific area that you were in.
For my area, yes. So I got Singular.
So I don't live in Prunedale. None of the geeks here do. But this is the trick. Go around to people. You know, when you're in the next Starbucks or your next shopping center and there's people talking on the phone and they're having a conversation, they're not saying, can you hear me? Hello? those people that are annoying the heck out of you, go annoy them and go, excuse me, what service provider do you have? Uh-huh. And, you know, is it work for you? And kind of do a little survey, because that's the best way to do it, is find out the people that are in the same space as you are and who's happy with their service. And I think that's the way to do it. Okay. I bet there's a website out there, and the geeks, I think, are looking
right
now.
There are several of them.
That really kind of try to classify the area based on the cell phone.
Okay.
Something else you want to do is to get a good cell phone. Don't get a free cheapie, because
that's the problem, I think.
Does that really matter, Sean, for reception?
Yeah, well, get a tri-band. So tri-band cell phones, they broadcast at 900, 1800, and 1900 megahertz. These cheaper phones only have dual band, and to get access to those higher frequencies, you need a good phone, and those higher frequencies are going to give you better reception, better quality,
okay,
and fewer drop calls.
Are you sure about that?
The tri-band were
about international travel.
No. You know, I had AT&T service, and I have a Palm Treo 650, and I picked up a cell phone from my wife, and just on a lark, I said, you know, just check my phone service, make sure everything's cool. And they said, oh, you know, you need to upgrade to Singular. I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure I want to do that. Do I really need to do that? And they said, well, you'll get a new SIM card, and it will give you access to the higher frequency, because you have a tri-band phone. You don't have access to it right now. And I asked, does that really matter? And the guy was pretty techie, and he explained that, you know, it does matter.
Okay.
And something you want to do, too, is turn off your phone if you're driving from city to city. If you're finding your reception's not that great, turn off the phone and then turn it back on, and it'll reestablish a connection with the local tower, and you'll get better reception. I've noticed
great
that, too.
Idea. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Patty, for the call.
Sure, have a great day.
Thank you,
bye.
Too. We're going to go to Santa Cruz, which is where we are, actually, technically. Patrick, welcome. What's your question today on GeekSpeak?
My name is Patrick, and I own a digital photography business and a digital photography lab. I have a whole network full of computers. I got laptops at home, the whole deal.
And you're calling to ask us a question?
Yeah, well, I am, because the ironic thing is that my wife is out currently buying a goat and designing a gray water reclamation system, and my family is a really good example of the sort of collision between the green revolution and the technological revolution. And I was just calling to ask the geeks if they had given any thought to issues about sustainability and about some of the materials that go into all these computers, and we're using more and more and more of them, and how do we reconcile these things? It's sort of a political geek question, I suppose.
This is so interesting. Drew just walked in. This is totally up his alley, but he doesn't have his headphones on, so he didn't hear any of that. So you're basically talking in general, like your wife's dealing with getting a goat for the family and having gray water reclamation, a lot of recycling probably, and really paying attention to our impact on the planet,
right?
And our impact, you know, more specifically, very locally. And and the next thing is you've got tons of computers, and you've got
we just use all kinds of electricity at the shop and all these things.
So are you kind of wondering where? I mean, it's more of a philosophical discussion. Is that
kind
of your thinking?
Yeah, and then perhaps trends in manufacturing. What is going on with the manufacturers about dealing with some of these issues? I know there are some that are requiring an upfront fee for recycling these materials.
Well, there's a California law now about monitors. All monitors have to have an additional recycling fee, which makes sense because we're kind of inundated with old monitors, especially all of a sudden. I don't think that the tech companies are paying attention to this very much. I think that the chip manufacturers are overseas mostly. And
what are you talking about?
Yeah, there's two things going on that I just saw. Good morning, Lyle.
Morning.
I think just recently this week, I think Dell has announced a free program, which is the first one of its kind, to take back their equipment and recycle it. So I don't have my machine up in front of me, but if you guys could.
So Dell's got we will take care of the recycled machine?
Yeah, because there's been a lot of heat, like our caller was talking about, with these large PC vendors like Apple, Dell and HP in particular.
Yeah, Apple's not that large.
Apple would love to have this problem. And being responsible for the amount of waste production that they have in terms of, you know, a three-year life cycle on a PC and it turns into junk. The other thing that's going on is there's a directive that came out of the European Union, and it's also being adopted by United States manufacturers. It's called Rojas, the reduction.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about that.
Reduction of hazardous substances. And Sean, both of us are in the PC manufacturing biz, and both of our businesses, I think, have been impacted by this.
Yeah. And so, what are they doing? Are they going to make a mandate for businesses?
Yeah, all motherboards and boards, graphics boards that NVIDIA uses are Rojas compliant.
Okay,
so it's ROHS, and it stands for the restriction of the use of certain hazardous substances in electrical and electronic equipment. And what this means is, it's got to be able to go into a landfill and not into a special place. And the UK, the European Union, has really pushed that all electronic standards conform to this, or you just can't sell.
And that's a major thing.
So
it's
now
it's a tremendous difference. Every single printed circuit board that's being manufactured is subject to this. Some industries are subject to it immediately, and others not so much.
And how tight is the regulation? I mean,
you have to remove all the lead from the solder, which, number one, is a gigantic engineering challenge because the solder doesn't flow the same without lead. There's no other. They're struggling to find a material to replace the lead to get it to flow in the.
I hadn't heard about this at all, you guys. It's so good that you're in this field to know about this. So
and then the selenium and arsenium. I think there's a list of all these poisonous toxic substances that are used in the chip assembly process.
And this thing is called what? Rojas.
Rojas is the industry nickname.
Can somebody look it up and make sure to get up on the site?
Yeah, it's
the acronym is what?
R capital R lowercase O capital H capital S restriction of hazardous substances.
And you'll see that logo on electronic on boards.
Yeah, I didn't know that it was a environmental thing. Years ago, the CE, the European Union did CE, which is
European Community.
Yeah, I can't remember what that stands for, but it's another kind of spec on safety with gear. It has kind of a side effect that I don't like very much. But when I was in manufacturing, it was very important that we got certified, and it did make us pay attention to the safety factors and go through a lot of expense and everything, really. But now you see everything, even stuff that's pretty much targeted just for the U.S., has that logo on it, which means it meets certain safety factors.
There's a number of national
it's effective
standards. The CE mark is for the European Community. The CTIC mark is for Southeast Asia, Australia, the NEMCO, SEMCO, TEMCO. There's a bunch of Scandinavian ones.
And these are all specs on safety and different issues.
They're all compliance standards that laboratories test for. Like when you look at a piece of electronic equipment in the U.S., you see the UL mark stamped in, cast in, burned in, printed everywhere. UL stands for Underwriters Laboratories, which is a specification that these equipment manufacturers adhere to, which in the case of electronic stuff deals with the amount of heat they produce, the amount of radiation they produce, the amount of interference that occurs because of that radiation, so that we're safe generally.
Well,
and there are ISO standards that these companies have to conform to make sure that they do this sort of thing. So,
but those standards are not environmentally related, they're human safety related. Mm-hmm. So the Rojas, the push from Europe is really changing our industry. And Japan is following closely behind. Unfortunately, the United States is not taking a leadership role.
You know, something I learned, HD-DVD, Blu-ray, we've been talking about this. Mm-hmm. Something that's not being talked about is HD-DVD does conform to DVD standards, and it uses the same substrate, the same media, mm-hmm. which has a lot of toxins in it.
Uh-huh.
Blu-ray, it got rid of all the toxins except one that can be recirculated in the manufacturing process.
They called it Green Ray.
So, interesting. Blu-ray maybe is better for the environment, those discs are.
Interesting, Sean.
I wonder how much spin that is, because, of course, there's a big debate here. So any of the information you find about these disc formats, you've got to wonder where that information is actually coming from. What's the you know, response from the DVD form, the HDVD form from that? Well,
I read that in a home theater magazine.
Okay. Patrick, did we kind of talk a little bit about your concerns?
Yeah, thank you very much. You've exceeded my geeky expectations once again.
I got to say that being green, and I mean, I'm using a very loose term. I don't even like that term necessarily. But paying attention to the impact you have on your local environment and larger scale environment, in a lot of ways, is a pretty geeky thing to do. In as much as it isn't, it's an intellectual interest, and it's, I mean, my grandfather, for example, taught me to recycle. He started recycling, I guess it was in the early 80s, which is, you know, kind of early for recycling. And I remember him crushing cans, and I didn't understand what it was about. And he talked about how this material, there's only a little bit of it. And the reason why he thought about those things is he's an engineer. He's very focused on his geeky side, I guess. Anyway, so Grandpa David, thank you very much.
Hey, Patrick, do you have a worm bin in addition to your goat?
Or was a compost with worms?
Is he still there?
I guess Patrick hung up. Well, thank you very much, Patrick, for the call. I really appreciate it.
Are worms important?
Thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
Oh, you know
what? He's still there.
Yeah, your mic wasn't connected to him, but he's gone now. Sorry about that. All right, let's go on to the next call, though. Digital camera problems from Kurt. Hi, Kurt. You're in Santa Cruz?
Yes.
Where in Santa Cruz are you?
Well, I'm up on Water Street.
All right. So what's the dilemma with digital cameras?
Okay, I've had it before once, and we solved it. And I don't remember how we solved it. I've got a DC 3400 Kodak.
Okay.
And when I click on the photo base on my screen, and it brings up the whatever you call it, then I'm not very computer literate here.
That's fine.
And I click on the camera for connection. It says invalid class string.
Invalid class string. Interesting. Okay, so you've got a bug in software.
I have no idea.
Okay. Do you have the CDs that you originally got with the camera that gave you this software?
I just moved. I don't know where they're at.
Okay. I think you need to reinstall that. It's possible that it's in a different problem with your operating system, that it's using a shared library or something, but I would do that. Make sure, of course, that your connection to your camera is good, that nothing fell out, you know, if it's USB or...
Oh, yeah. I've
checked that.
You know, moved everything in and out to clean the,
okay,
clean the pins.
All right. So when you connect your camera, do you see... If you open up your Finder, if you open up, sorry, your My Computer, and you see all the list of things attached to your computer, does one of them actually say your camera? Is there like a picture that represents a hard drive? Well, go ahead and click on that and look inside. You'll probably see your images inside there. That's a hard drive mount of your camera, and you should be able to copy the files manually off of that. It might be less convenient because of the buttons and everything, but you could do it that way.
Explain that again, please.
When you connect your camera up, a new hard drive is basically going to show up on your computer. When you open up that hard drive symbol, you're actually looking at the contents of your camera. This is pretty much how USB and FireWire camera connections work, any kind of device that has storage. You'll see it as a local hard drive. And you can take the files and drag them out of there onto your desktop or into a folder that you want to keep them on your computer. And you've basically made a copy of them on your computer manually, instead of using the software that came with your camera that you have a simple button. So it's not as convenient. But it allows you to deal with this problem until you actually find your software.
And so that would be going into My Computer?
Yeah.
Exactly. You'll get a drive letter. It's your camera.
I see.
So give that a shot. And
now, the other question is, since I just moved and everything's in boxes, I don't know how long it's going to take me to find that disk. I tried to contact Kodak, and they say that they don't give online or phone support anymore.
You might be able to download their application from their website.
That was my question.
Yeah.
Can I do that there?
Rather than sorting through boxes, it's the same difference.
In fact, you'll get a better version, right, a more up-to-date version. But sometimes companies don't let you download it. They only let you download updates to the application. And the thing with Kodak is they're kind of like that. Their software is not free kind of thing. Definitely give it a shot on their website. Go to downloads and look through the application. Try to find the name of the application that you currently have. And give it a shot. Thank you so much for the call, Kurt.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, we also got a question from Tom through email, I'm assuming. Did any of you geeks research this already? Should I just attack it right away? He's got an iMac from 1999. It's running 8.5. He likes iMacs. He's an artist. So let's see. Should he get a Dell or a new iMac? When's a good time to buy it? What's the prices? He doesn't do a lot of graphics. Concerns about viruses. Considering a PC. I think if you're considering a Windows, Windows, there's probably good motivations for that. Miles, what do you think? A Mac user for a long time wants to go to Windows. You think that's a good thing to do? You think it's going to be problematic?
If you have software for Windows, then yeah. If you... want to avoid viruses, if you're having problems with that, then it's probably a good idea to switch over.
I think that anything he does from going from an old iMac, running 8.5, Mac OS 8.5,
will be an improvement.
Which would be an improvement so much that it won't even matter. It'll be a whole new world. I kind of want to start singing. The phone numbers, call us up before I do start singing and ask us tech questions. The lines are open, 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-KUSP. Well, we got some time here, geeks. Any more news? Drew, you just walked in. You missed the news segment, so you got some news for the week? I know you're computerless right now, which... But, you answered the whole thing about Rojo so well. I'm pretty impressed.
Well, thanks. I got a little corollary to that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, storage equipment is exempt from the Rojas specification until the year 2010.
Do you know why that is? Is it hard to make?
I don't know why that is. Some clever lobbyist was able to negotiate a loophole for the storage industry is my best guess.
Does that mean any storage-related product or just the more direct ones?
The stuff that I work with, network attached storage, and most of the products that are disk drive based that only do one thing, which is storage.
Okay, so if it's focused for storage, you're immune.
Like if you buy a system like from Network Appliance that's a storage system, it's immune. If you buy a Seagate hard drive that's USB, I don't think that's exempt.
But if people stop buying non-environmental hardware, you'd be surprised how quickly companies will move over.
We're working on making that happen before the deadline.
Yeah, I remember when I worked at AMD, and this was four years ago, they went green. They didn't have to, but, you know, they felt like they needed to. That was really neat. They went to completely organic substrate for their chips.
Nice.
You know, I'm interested about the storage media issue. I'm wondering if it has to do with the structure of hard drives, or if there was some kind of idea that we want hard drive prices to be cheap right now, so let's keep it open. You know, kind of like we want a lot of...
The place where I'm more familiar with it mattering is in the printed circuit boards.
Okay.
It's particularly the lead and the solder, I mentioned before, and the actual containing of the stuff that's inside the chips themselves.
All right, well, thank you for that. We do have a call, and if you'd like to call in, you're welcome to do so. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. We'll take anything you'd like. From SoCal, Rick, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, I've got a problem on a couple-year-old Sony laptop. Whenever Windows update, either I deliberately try to run it or back when I allowed it to run automatically, it would hang up the computer for 2 to 3 hours running at 100% CPU usage, and then it would complete as though, you know, the way it's supposed to. Do you have any idea what's going on?
It's broken. Sean, you got any ideas?
What was your connection speed?
DSL.
Wow. So it wasn't your connection speed. You could surf the web. Everything else seemed okay.
Well, it's running at 100% processor, though, right?
Yeah, just when Windows Update kicks in.
You know what? How much free space do you have in your hard drive?
A couple gigs.
Because you're downloading a lot of updates.
This is during the phase when it's trying to determine if I need any updates.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How long does it have you let it run for doing that?
I think the longest it took to complete was 3 hours.
Oh.
And that's just a scan to figure out what to download and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And then it continues.
Now, have you done it recently? Because they've updated that scanning tool.
I did it, I started trying to call you guys about 3 weeks ago. That's the last time I did it because it's so painful.
Yeah, that's pretty recent.
Something's going on, yeah.
Definitely something going on with your
All right, next caller, please.
What OS do you have?
XP Home Edition, Service Pack 2.
Yeah, that should be fine.
You think there's a hardware problem that he's running into?
Yeah, how much memory do you have in your system?
What virus protection software do you have?
It's running the McAfee stuff that comes with AOL.
Turn that off while
That's
you do
good
this.
Idea.
Yeah.
Turn this off while you do it. So just disable it while you were at the website.
While you do the Microsoft update.
Okay.
Because it's very possible that they're conflicting with each other. One is scanning and one is trying to scan, and they're doing it at the same time, and they're having problems. It's a possibility.
Okay.
Try that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Call us back if it works and let us know.
Okay, thanks.
Wait, you like that stab at the dark? You think that was good?
That was good.
If we're right, it'll be a miracle. Won't it?
Yeah, no kidding. Well,
they tell you to do that.
Yeah. That's true. All right. Hey, Tom's actually called us in about iMac. Okay, Tom, what's your question?
Well, I've got this old iMac, and I've got some friends that think I'm crazy to spend $1,200 on a new iMac when I could get a Dell for $500, but I like the iMacs. It sounded like you were saying, go ahead and get a Dell because it'll be a whole new world anyways.
What's your profession?
Well, I am an artist.
Okay, you can't afford a Macintosh.
I don't do the artwork on the computer.
Yeah, but if you're an artist, you can't afford a Macintosh. You have to get the cheapest computer possible.
Yeah.
So there's your decision for you. What you need to do is have you need to get someone to donate a new computer to you because people should support art. That's what I do. So...
I do have a day job. I'd have to wait a little
All right,
longer.
You're going to just be amazed by the new iMacs. You're going to love it. It's going to be, if you buy a new iMac right now, you'll just be bragging about everything in your life.
At least for a year.
Cheaper in January or just go for it?
I don't think Macs get cheaper, really, right now. I think what they do is they add a whole bunch more features and keep the price the same.
I'd wait for the holidays. Prices are just going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And new technologies will be announced. You don't want to be stuck, with an old chip if it's going to be updated in just another month or two. I don't know. I'd wait.
I'd keep a look at also, though, since you know you're shopping, take a look at a few websites that have good deals and see if you can snatch them up. It's kind of like when you're looking for a new house. You want to look at a lot of stuff. Even if you're not ready to buy, you kind of want to look now. You're educating yourself about a major investment.
Right.
And you're going to run into a situation where Apple's going to release a new product, I don't know when, but the next time they do, the older stuff is still going to be in inventory for a little while, and you'll be able to get it. And at that point, it's the time to get it before it goes away. So we've seen some loss of some really good screens that Apple used to have, the earlier cinema displays with the plastic cases. You can't get them anymore, and they're better than the newer ones. So there's this idea that you want to kind of be in a space where you're ready to go when the best price comes along. But yeah, what I said about going to Dell or going to a Windows machine, you're not going to be unhappy with that either, because what your experience right now is so horrible.
Yeah.
But then again, it's a learning curve.
Yeah. Boy, waiting till January, that'd be the best.
Okay.
Yeah. Because come January time, you're going to see prices get slashed. People want to sell stuff. They want to make their quarterly, their first quarter, numbers, and no one buys computers after the holidays. So.
Well, previously shopping around, I was surprised to see the best price was on Amazon with $100 rebate and free mm-hmm. shipping.
Yeah.
So I'll keep shopping around.
And also, don't forget the cheat of finding a student at a university and seeing what kind of deals they offered to the students and having the student buy it for you. Not that I totally condone that, but that's an idea. I mean, the truth of the matter is that the university gets a little bit money, and the business that sells the computer doesn't get as much. That's how it works.
That's quite a recommendation. You just kind of go up to a student, excuse me.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah.
Buy me a computer.
I'll give you $20. Yeah. Oh, $20. He's an artist, remember?
Oh, that's right.
Okay, so I'm looking through the calls. Let's see. We got another minute. Okay. Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to figure out who we're going to take. Let's go to Royal Oaks. And Royal Oaks, we have Ken. Welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question, Ken?
I got a quick one. My HP laptop just auto-selects. If the selector's on a hot button, without touching anything, bam, it'll just like I double-clicked it. And I kind of know if that's operating system or mouse driver. What would the problem, what would the source of that
Is it
problem?
Always happening when you click the, is it on the pad?
No, I just mean if the arrow is over a hot button, it'll just auto-select it on its own. It'll just trigger it after about 10 to 15 seconds. And I won't touch anything.
Is there a touchpad on this thing?
Oh, yes, exactly, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Clean that. Any other recommendations?
You might be hitting the touchpad as you're typing.
No, but it's just, if I leave it on, it'll automatically do it in 10 or 15 seconds.
With your hands away from it.
Randomly. It'll just like,
it sounds
15
like,
seconds, bam, it'll just trigger.
Okay, so you've got a problem with hardware, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's
hardware, gotcha.
When you're dragging stuff around, does it happen once in a while that you drop it?
Not so much, no. Mm-hmm. It works fine. The selector, the little pad, the trackpad works fine. Everything's fine.
Does your trackpad have when you actually touch the trackpad itself? Can you double click and can you select stuff with that, or do you have to use the button?
Yeah, it's a little bit slow. You got to do it very firmly.
Yeah, you should be able to disable that.
Yeah, you might want to disable that and use the button.
Go into the trackpad properties and control panel and see if you can disable the tapping.
Sure it's the trackpad like hardware problem.
I think so. It's the first place to check.
And so what we're saying is that the trackpad itself has a sensor on there that you can use to select stuff, and it's probably misfiring somehow, some reason.
Yeah. Maybe it's just not on your notebook well enough. Loose or something.
Normally you can turn that off, and if you turn that off, then you have to use the buttons, but you won't have this problem.
Yeah, gotcha.
Thank you so much for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay,
bye-bye.
GeekSpeak is supported by Watsonville Community Hospital. Shortness of breath, numbness in the arms, and chest pain or pressure are symptoms of heart attack. Getting to the emergency room immediately could save a life. Watsonville Community Hospital, 724-4741. The Geeks today, Drew Meyer showed up about halfway through. Drew, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Miles Elam is here, as he is almost every week, and Sean Cleveland. Thank you, Geeks, very much for being here today with me.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Answering the phones every day, every week for Geek Speak is Rick Philman. Rick, thank you so much. You're amazing. And thank you for listening to Geek Speak. To those that called in, thanks for making Geek Speak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. And who wants to listen to that? Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, used by permission. Geek Speak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH Santa Otto, on the web at kusp.org. Coming up next is Castle Cottage. Next week, we're going to have the author, John Derbyshire, about The Unknown Quantity, his new book, all about algebra, math. I know it sounds a little dry, but in reality, it's quite fascinating, very geeky, and that'll be next week on Geek Speak.